condition, my condition was ill.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Well, and welcome back to Stocks and Giants. I'm Tom Howe. She's Jay-Z. On the board is Mr. Matt Weber and girlfriend are in New York. So they're having a nice time out in New York. I don't think Matt's ever been there. So hopefully he'll hook up with Mr. Kenny Pulcheri and see the town, have a nice time. He deserves it. And his birthday week continues. S&P futures up 2, Dow futures up 18, NASDAQ futures up 16. Kevin, how are you?
Good morning. I'm doing okay. Still pouting about the Bears, but otherwise I'm okay.
Yeah, well, did you see that every new head coach lost their first week? There's like 8 of them. Just saying.
Don't know what to make of that. There's usually a reason that you're a new head coach. You took over a bad team.
That's very possible. So, Where's your bet coming down? Is Jay-Z going to be able to handle the precocious Venkman, Maddie's dog, who loves to like run away when you want to take him for a walk and all kinds of stuff? Is Jay-Z going to win this battle of wills?
I don't know, because I have never seen Jessica's nasty stare. So I don't know if she can stare him down or not.
Chief doesn't know that Jay-Z is a very experienced dog owner.
I see. You almost lost yours to a coyote last week.
Okay, that wasn't fair.
Right. Because it's a cheap shot?
Yes, it was. No, my dog is just, you know, protective. As soon as you get within, like, 20 feet of me, he's like, who are you? And he wasn't on a leash because he's 4 years old and he's normally very obedient.
Normally, yes.
Literally never done that before in his life. And it was pitch black outside, and I always do that with him. And as soon as I realized that it was a coyote, so did he, and he was quicker than me.
Well, actually, Audrey in her backyard now has a young coyote. Must be just booted out of the den. He's setting up shop right outside her backyard in the little grassland or whatever. So she got a little coyote that hangs around, and he's running out and grabbing all the pears from the pear tree that are falling. So he hasn't figured out how to hunt yet, but he's got the pear buffet going.
That's so cute.
Yeah, well, but I don't
know. Look, if you got coyote problems, you just, you know, go get, like, you know, the Acme... pick it, the Acme rocket backpack or something. Put it out there. Just leave it. It'll take care of itself.
I see. Okay, well. So, Kevin, what are you making?
We're going Wile E. Coyote reference.
Yes, I'm getting it. So, okay. What do you make of this?
It's not funny.
No. What do you make of, I'm looking at the Atlantic. There's three storms out there, not one. One might head to Mexico, and the other one I think is going to head up to like Greenland or someplace. But it's pretty active right now. I couldn't bear to watch yesterday afternoon the FEMA guy and the you know it's going to be the biggest storm ever, and they have the best response ever that anybody's ever done anywhere. Just like Puerto Rico, I thought Puerto Rico was a disaster, Kevin. Are we rewriting history on that one as well?
Well, Puerto Rico was a disaster. I don't know that. FEMA, if there's anything FEMA could have done about it, their infrastructure was terrible. They had no, they were disorganized. Ultimately, it never matters whether it's New Orleans, whether it's Florida, whether it's, any part of the country. It really relies more on local preparedness and local execution, the local government, the local law enforcement, etc. It relies on them a whole lot more than FEMA. FEMA is just supplemental, and they need FEMA to do a good job. But when you know when the local governance is terrible and doesn't execute well, there's no chance. There's nothing FEMA is going to do that's going to make it better.
Well, they can get on TV for 4 hours and tell you what a great job they're going to do. They're already telling people how long they'll be
there. They can do that. Yeah, they can do that. But you know, FEMA in general, FEMA comes in after the fact. But the evacuations and all that kind of stuff, that, you know, that's local organization. Florida's government historically has been really, really good at this. And that's why you don't hear all the complaining about when a hurricane hits Florida.
But well, they expect to have, you know,
they get more of them, so they're more sensitive to it. But that doesn't mean other Gulf states and Atlantic states shouldn't be prepared.
The one they had the real problem with was Andrew, where he just blew all those houses down that were totally not code and everything. That was an awful area, that south of Miami, with the Homestead or whatever it is.
Well, and it was an incredibly powerful hurricane,
too.
So,
well, this one,
it was going to wreak havoc under the best of circumstances.
Did you ever see one of those wind gauges where they, 60 miles an hour, basically your hat blows off, 70 miles an hour, you can't walk, 75, a empty boxcar blows over, 80, a full boxcar blows over. I mean, it's pretty, once you start getting up into those numbers, it's pretty awful, and the stuff that's flying in the air becomes dangerous. I mean, so you're talking about a sheet of plywood can take your head off, basically. So it's pretty awful when you start getting over 100 miles an hour, much less 130 or 140, whatever this thing is. It's pretty bad, but hopefully everybody will come out of it as best they can. But certainly, because everybody, there's got to be some part of both of you, because I know you're both very, very nice people. There's got to be one part of you that when they have the news reporter standing there in the wind like a foot from the water that wants a person just flipped in the water. Not hurt, but just when they do it so ignorantly, like this last second, there's got some 24-year-old girl out there a foot from the water looking at the swells. You want to see her like flipped on her ear or something. Just, and the cameraman too. Is there one party that wants to see?
It's happened before too. I've seen clips of the reporter standing there, getting blown down the hill blown over and slides down the hill into the water. Yeah, it's one of those things. It's standard TV technique where they cut live to somebody, and there is no value added to the report.
No. No,
by doing that, it just makes for better TV, and that it's the only reason that they do it is for dramatic purposes. But as far as adding additional information or better context, it really doesn't. It's the same thing that they do, when they'll cut to the reporter on the street, and all that's behind the reporter is some police cars with flashing lights.
Right, right.
It doesn't tell you anything. It just it's just drama. They're splicing drama into the report.
Let's put it this way. When people complain about fake news and the news, and a lot of people do complain about it, I mean, I complain about some of the fact that I honestly believe that my criticism is that I think the population, and I could be wrong on this, obviously I would feel this because I wouldn't be doing the show the way I do it if I didn't. I think people are more capable of listening to a deeper story than we normally give them, but evidently the guys that are making bazillions of dollars doing it think the other way, and they must be right because they're the ones making the bazillion dollars, not you and me, Kevin. But I honestly think that the constant lying to people, have either by omission or commission on both sides, and since news has become an all day event, it's no longer news; it's entertainment, it's ratings, and it's just sort of changed. And I don't know whether I blame the people doing it or I blame the people listening, or if people want beer and you serve beer, who's at fault? The person who wants a beer or the person who serves a beer? And I don't know. I mean, or both. It's one of those questions you're never going to answer, right? I mean, just one of those things. I mean, people seem to want their news to be entertaining now, which takes you to a whole new level. Because most news isn't really entertaining. I mean, right?
apparently it is. The other half of it is that it's just the looking at it through my prism. So, a whole lot of people want to watch the news that confirms what they already think.
As Dr. Jay told me when we started the show, he says people are willing to pay for affirmation. They're not willing to pay for information.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah. Speaking of information.
That's a pretty good way of putting it. You know, it's kind of interesting, too, that, you know, this idea of shading the truth. I've had this conversation this week that, you know, is that, and it really came up in kind of a stupid way, but it like many conversations I have, but it was over the issue of, you know, is it even okay to shade the truth, whether it's standard procedure or not? And in this case, it came up in, you know, this editorial that was anonymously written and published in the New York Times, where the editor in an interview, and he wasn't making a big point of it. He was just kind of reviewing, you know, for his own newspaper's podcast, for the New York Times podcast, and he mentioned the things that they did to verify that the writer was who he said he was and had the position he said he was, and the writer. And he said, you know, we talked to him personally, identified, you know, got the right kind of identification. Then we did a background check. At which point, you know, my reaction to that was, oh, well, if they did a background check, if they had to do a background check, it wasn't some of these high-level people that were speculated. You know, they don't do a background check to prove that John Huntsman is who he says he is or is a government official. You know, I get this this guy who says to me, "Well, he may have said that just to throw everybody off the trail." And I said, "Well, that would be lying."
Yeah,
said, well, maybe
yeah.
He did, like, you know, a quick Wikipedia search or something like that, so that he could claim he made a background check. Then he's technically not lying. Well, first of all, nobody would ever consider that, would use the word background check for some kind of cursory web search. And second is, if he's technically not lying, he's lying.
Well, I mean, it's the,
you know, but yeah. But the idea that that's acceptable to people now.
Well, yeah, it's not.
What frosts me.
I'm a little bit. This is, well, I guess both sides to it. Maybe because I'm around more people from the right, I hear it more from them. But I'm thinking both sides to it. The thing that sort of bothers me a lot, Kevin, is especially, you know. I have, I guess, somewhat of a background in some of this stuff, but, you know, I've been known to read a book without pictures, and, you know, and continued doing it after school. Just because if somebody were to come up to be, I've met some of these guys from the Federal Reserve, my buddies, they have interesting friends, to say the least, guys that are historians in certain areas. There's guys that have worked for an exchange that if you sit there and listen to them are spectacular historians of the decade of the 20s or something. And if they, I mean, I think for in a lot of ways, the work stands on its own. I mean, I'm sure if any one of these guys, if we brought them on the show and we were national or something, somebody would say, hey, that guy doesn't know bleep because, you know, he's an exchange official. Yeah, he does. I mean, you know, people can have amazing things that they know, and when you trash, like, the background, he's not a PhD in history, he's not this, he's not an educator, it doesn't matter. He spent hours and hours, maybe weeks and months, reading books on a subject, and he knows way more than, you know, I mean, the idea that you trash somebody's background, I mean, even like Jose Canseco, I mean, the background, you know, who knows what the guy's brain cell is like. The fact is, when he talked about steroids, he knew what he was talking about. Right, he was
an expert.
He was an expert there
in the field.
So I mean, the idea that you try and somebody actually put something out there that makes sense, then you trash their education. You trash someone and say it can't be right. I mean, what if we find out that Einstein cheated to get out of fifth grade? Does that mean he wasn't Einstein? I mean, I you know, I doubt it. You know what I'm saying? There's a lot of trashing of at all levels going on to make this entertainment. And I really do believe, Kevin, as I age, that a lie of omission is worse than a lie of commission, telling half the story. You can give people the absolute wrong impression on everything. Speaking of which, this morning I happened to notice, we are up to, with 1 month left to go in the fiscal year, the deficit this year is $850 billion with 1 month to go, which is 32% higher than last year, due to the tax cuts and so forth. And that includes, Kevin, I think, the money that was paid, well, it must include, it's a whole number, the number that was paid from the people who, you know, brought the stuff back from overseas, which is totally the wrong story, but that's what everybody likes to hear. Now, in the academy, you know, I think for most people, especially at the lower levels, are starting to pick up a little bit. The $10 wage earner is probably making 12. I think there's some movement in the lower ends. You're starting to see, like, mortgages come back down again because these interest rates are creeping up, so I don't know how that area. I mean, there's pockets going plus and minus, but overall, I think it's plus. Question is, how do you know if it's enough, Kevin? You poured $400 or $500 billion into the place that you just made up. How do you know if it's enough? I mean, whether the policy is good or not. I mean, I honestly don't know. We've been doing it for so long, and we've never, this idea that you prime the pump by giving money to your friends, whoever it is, Democrat or Republican, and then everybody else is supposedly supposed to benefit because you told them they are, whether they do or they don't, I don't know. I watched, and then even the idea of the fiscal stimulus versus the monetary stimulus. And I remember this lecture from Milton Friedman like it was yesterday. And most times there is no such thing as fiscal policy, because you're always going to make up the money that you... So the money supply in that same 11 months is up $550 billion. And the deficit's up $400 billion. So, okay. If it was fiscal policy, you would have borrowed that money from people and it wouldn't have affected the money supply. That's not what happened. The Fed poured money into the system, so you essentially made up the money for the deficit, which is inflationary, which creates your debt. Now, and you got to ask yourself, in the last 7 years, is every single banker, you know, who's got more money than avarice, every bank is, we almost can't do business with them. They're so difficult to deal with their compliance people, background checks, and this, that, and the other thing. And I just wonder if we've gained any ground, Kevin. I mean, things look better, but are they? I mean, people have a bigger debt load than a year ago. I mean, is the average person, the debt load is probably bigger by, you know, 30, 40 grand. Is he 30, 40 grand ahead of the game? And I'm thinking the median person is not. I mean, I don't know how to prove that, but I just, these numbers just keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and we keep floating somebody first. Now, if I was the person that always, whenever you built in the city, I got a new concrete contract, I'd be so for this stuff. Oh, sure, give me more dough, I'll spread it around. But I mean, I think that this whole strategy is flawed, and yet I hope I'm wrong, which is even worse, right?
Yeah, and you know what? Anecdotally, I'd say that a whole lot of people are better off, but I can't take the local economy and necessarily expand that to the national economy any more than, like I say, whether I take the national numbers and I say, well, yeah, but the local economy is different here. So, you know, I can say locally people are doing better, substantially better. But I don't know how that translates to the national policy. I don't know that it does.
Well, I mean, if you, that money, I mean, I'd hate to even use the word, the fact that in the last, you know, in 9 years, the burden on all the people you think are doing better, if you say 9 years ago your total debt government-wise was, for your family, was $250,000 and now it's $850,000, the guy'd look at you like you got four heads. What are you talking about? I mean, nobody even has a concept of that, Kevin. The story always is.
Understood. And the, you know, it, wages are up here higher than they are anywhere else. And, you know, I hope that when you have Carl on later, I'd love it if you'd ask him, because they did cite a 2.9% wage increase this time around. And I don't know that that's true or what the effect is. And Carl will be the guy who has insight into the numbers. But maybe we are starting to gain some stuff. I'd also be interested to know, of all new jobs created, how many are part-time and how many are full-time? Because, you know, for the better part of the last 8 to 10 years, we've been creating part-time jobs.
Right. Well, the...
And racking up the numbers and saying the numbers are great. But my sense is, and I did, you know, we were discussing this in class just last evening, that fewer people are working two jobs and part-time, and that there's more full-time jobs available to them.
Well, you have to, when you look at the, I have to believe that even the, if you take last month's wage number, which was a terrific number, by the way, Now, Carl will have a better idea of what it actually entails than me, but it looked to me like a pretty good number. I think the number actually was, year over year, was 2.5, Kevin, on the wages, okay, and 2.9 on the inflation. Right? So, does that get you?
I heard it reported. I haven't looked at it myself, but the report I heard last Friday morning was 2.9 wage.
Okay, whatever it was, the number.
Because I had somebody complaining, well, that's just keeping pace because it was 2.95 for inflation.
Right, whatever it was, the best number wage wise is still a little less than inflation. Whether it's 0.4% or 0.04, people haven't gained anything, essentially, and then in the mid level. And I think any inflation numbers are rigged, which I think we both do. I mean, clearly, and I really do think, and I've said this 100 times, the difference between somebody who's paying their own hospitalization and somebody who isn't is almost like the depression versus okay line. I mean, if I gotta believe median income is probably up to 53,000 for a family, 54, something like that. If you're paying your own hospitalization, it must feel like 34. And if you're getting your stuff from work, you probably are paying a little bit of contribution, but your deductible is probably a little higher. But still, I'm saying you're living relatively large. You're probably living like you're making 70, where the other guy's living like he's making 35. That's how much difference it makes. And I believe, because I know people that are paying it themselves. And it's especially if you're older, those are big numbers.
Or they're just not buying it.
They just don't have it, which is even.
Which is risky, but not necessarily the worst thing that can happen.
Well, I mean, it's
unless you get sick, unless you get really, really sick, it becomes a good deal, and maybe people are starting to get wise a little bit to some of the alternatives that they have for fixed rate care that takes care of them on the low end. And And maybe even we have people, I'd like to think we have people getting smart enough to start looking for surgery centers that publish their prices and charge, X amount, and that's it.
I'm going to say, Kevin, that you are on the absolute leading edge of that, everybody I talk to, they might be picking up a little bit of it. They have no idea what you're talking about. They still go to the same hospital center.
It is picking up because...
Yes, I agree with you.
If I were to back up even 18 months, I would be getting exactly what you're reporting, but now I get a lot more people saying, yep, I've heard of that, I'm looking at it.
Well, in the Chicago area, I would say that the impression is we're going the other way, because the combinations by the four or five hospitals that are still around, there's nobody else left. So, I mean, if you're going to go to a Silver Cross hospital out by Audrey's, it's going to be a Silver Cross care center, it's going to be something, something, something. It's there's not a whole lot of independent people around doing this stuff. I mean, they're cheaper. I think you can find an MRI place. Those seem to be, like you say, you can find an MRI place, especially if you like the nobody likes an MRI, but I think some of the open concept ones are I think those are independent, aren't they? At least around here. But I'm saying
what you're finding more of is that the doctors are starting their practices and they're saying, we don't take insurance anymore. We just charge you a flat fee for care, a monthly fee. Subscribe to our service. You get a whole lot of care. If you still want to get catastrophic insurance coverage, we recommend that. But if you don't, you're getting all your basic care and you're paying.
And
it may be for a typical adult something like $50.
I've not necessarily seen that.
For someone our age, it'd be more like 75.
I've not necessarily seen that in this area, but it doesn't mean it's not here, Kevin. But you know what?
This is a relatively new trend, and you're seeing more and more practices convert to it because it is. It does give you a lower cost, predictable cost. I guess low cost, predictable cost alternative to trying to buy insurance that has all these forced care options built in that you have to have. What it's not going to ever cover is it's not going to cover your hospital stay. It's not going to cover your surgery.
You know what?
That's where you have to go. That's where you go back and you buy very, very high deductible insurance that keeps you from, you know, undoing your entire life if you happen to have to go in.
Well, that's,
you know, if you have a heart attack and you have to go in for heart surgery.
Kevin, you know what that's remarkably similar to in concept, although the marketing of it is totally different. It's what was the two kinds of PPO? What was the other one? The HMO. It's the same as
HMO.
An
HMO. Yeah.
It's the same as an HMO. Essentially.
Yeah, I remember when HMOs rolled out. That was like the 1970s when they tried to build popularity. The problem was that you were so restricted in your choice of a physician, and referrals were so infrequent. You know, that if you needed to see a heart specialist, it was almost impossible to get past your primary care doctor because they had such pressure to keep their costs down.
But the concept of
this particular model is, hey, you just come into our office. Anything that we can do in our office is covered in there. And the anything we can do includes things like, you know, setting your broken arm.
All right, Kevin, hold on to that thought, because
or certain kinds of outpatient.
At some level, it actually works the same way. SP Futures down a quarter. Dow Futures is down 2. NASDAQ Futures up 10 as we're waiting for the hurricane. Oil up 63 cents, almost $70. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure.
but I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Howie, Mr. Kevin O'Neill, Jay-Z on the board. We have S&P futures unchanged. We have Dow futures down 11 and NASDAQ futures up 10. So we got kind of a slow and mixed morning here. Oil up 63 cents, 69.88. 10-year yield 2.97. It's actually down a tenth of a point today, or I mean a hundredth of a point, but it was up yesterday. Over in Europe, we've got slow to the upside. DAX up 19.1%, FTSE up 5, call that flat. CAC around up 24.5%, so they've got a little bit of movement in the CAC around. Over in Asia, everybody down, but not much. Nikkei down 60 points. They were up huge yesterday, 0.3%. Shanghai was down, but they're down like every day, down 9 points, 0.3%. 26.56, and the Shanghai down 77, another 0.3%. 26.343, so they're like at a, you know, over a decade low. So whatever's happening over there is not good. Say oil up 63 cents, Brent up 18. That spread's actually come in a little bit. It's only $9.40 now, or it was $10 yesterday. And we have gold down $1.30, still 1,200. Silver unchanged. Copper 264, up actually a couple of cents, so better than the 261 yesterday. Jay-Z, what do you have for traffic, weather, sports? Cubs had one and they got one they needed to have, eh?
Yeah. Good morning, everyone. The time is now 6:36. Chicago is off to a cool start with mid-50s in many inland locations, but low 60s closer to the lake and in the city. Our typical low today is 56 with a high of 70. Phoenix is sunny all day today with temperatures getting up to 106 by mid-afternoon and cools down to about 90 in the evening. I'm going to have to make my two best friends start listening to the show because they just up and moved to Arizona.
Really?
Yep.
Cool.
Anyway, in baseball last night, the Cubs beat the Brewers 3-0. Quintana baffled the Brewers last night, while Cartini's two RBI hits fueled the offense, guiding the Cubs back to a two-game lead atop the NL Central over Milwaukee. The White Sox lost to the Royals last night, and the Diamondbacks beat the Rockies 6-3. One incident to report on the roadways this morning. The Kennedy Express lanes are closed between Montrose and the Edens due to an accident, and it's very congested. Traffic is stopped. Nothing else to report. Back to you.
So, Kevin, we have Cubs needed that one last night, eh?
They did. You know, kind of an interesting little fact. That is the sixth time that the Cubs have shut out the Brewers this year.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I never would have predicted that because they're a good hitting team.
I honestly think that both of those teams, their biggest weakness is they can't scratch the run in. Neither one of them. They're either going to be hitting that night or they're not. They're the station-to-station baseball teams, even though they're both fairly young.
I wouldn't go station-to-station because the Cubs are a very, very aggressive base-running team. But, yeah, they still sometimes have some issues with execution. You know, the man on third and one out, put your bat on the ball type of execution. And you know, because I watch the Cubs a lot, I'll speak more to them than the Brewers, but they just have these weeks when they decide for the whole week that they can't hit. And they just tank for a week and hot weeks or find a way to scratch out some wins in the playoffs when they're not hitting, you know, they should be thinking all they ever have to do is just buy time to get to their hot streak, and then they can put away a seven-game series. It's just, you know, you hope that they don't have four in a row where they don't hit, because they do that during the regular season often.
I think they have, you know, with what's happening in baseball, the changes in, now granted, you can say when you face guys the fourth time in the eighth or ninth inning, even if the guy was Warren Spahn, he's probably weakened somewhat, so I get that part. But I think that you have a lot of these teams where Matty had some incredible statistic that the Cubs have like the most games of two runs or less than anybody in baseball, and they got the most games of like five or six runs and more than anybody in baseball. The same team.
Yeah, they're hot and cold.
But I think a lot of it has to
really
do with
are.
Some pitchers, and that's why I worry about them in the playoffs. Some pitchers can just shut them down, and they got the idea we'll get them out of there in the seventh, and we'll chomp up on some bad reliever somewhere, which sometimes they do. One of the positives in modern baseball is having people that can play a bunch of different positions, and you move your lineup around way more than I even do in softball, for God's sake. And you get to carry that extra pitcher or two, for that matter. Maybe even three compared to 30 years ago when you used to carry 10 pitchers. Now you carry 13, most of them. So that's a huge advantage in one regard. But it's also a real disadvantage in another regard, in that if you do have a really good leadoff man and a really good second hitter, that's a skill set that is very unique. I mean, those are the guys where, you know, the guy walks, scratches out a hit somehow, gets on first base, steals second, your second guy hits the two hopper to second base, and the next guy hits a fly ball to left field, and a pitcher wonders what the hell happened. There's already a run on the board with nothing happening. The Cubs have zero ability to do that. Boston does. I mean, Boston has all the hitters and still seems to be able to do that. That's why I think Boston's by far the best team, even though they've been kind of shaky lately. But, I mean, you lose that whole skill set. I mean, I haven't seen the Cubs do that once this year. And yet that
way. The model for baseball is changing again. So for a while, it was make the starter throw as many pitches as possible. Try and limit get them to 100 by the end of the fifth inning so that you get to hit for the sixth and the seventh against the middle relief, because the middle relief isn't good. And as a result, they've gone to what you just described. Now you have 13 pitchers. You have they stock up on good relief pitchers. The good teams don't have a setup man and a closer. The good teams have four or five guys that the manager absolutely trusts in tense situations to bring into the game. And the Cubs have been like that all year. In fact, they've still stayed like that, even though they haven't had a closer for half of the season. Or they haven't had their closer. They haven't had Morrow. So that's the model that's come back. And of course, with that model, the other phenomenon that we have is that the remaining position players on the team, because there are fewer of them, have to play a lot of different positions. And the Cubs have that. So the response to that has been more teams are starting to swing at pitches early in the count. You're starting to see them come back because they're saying it doesn't matter. There's less value to making the pitcher throw six pitches per at bat. So look for the first good pitch you have. In the Cubs' case, they at least as of 2 weeks ago, they were leading baseball in batting average when they put the ball in play. So for them, it was always about putting your bat on the ball, and when they go into a funk, they strike out a lot. When they stop striking out a lot and get a little more selective with their pitches and start putting the bat on the ball, they score a lot of runs. And that kind of goes with the stat that you cited that Matty had shared with you. Is you strike out, you're not putting your bat on the ball, you're not scoring runs, but you put your bat on the ball and they're hitting like 317 or something like that when they put a ball in play. They're going to score a lot of runs. So their mission is bat on ball.
Well, but they have some of the young guys, and I'm going to say that the percentages back in the Sammy Sosa, Mark McGwire days were those guys were hitting so many home runs that the last thing you probably wanted to do, even though I haven't gone through it statistically, and because all these nerds now do this for you, the I don't know if that's politically correct, statistical guys or ladies. I mean, I don't think you wanted to take the big swing out of Sammy Sosa's hands on strike two. But I think you do want to take it out of Ian Happ's hands. I mean, Ian Happ's 15 home runs, not 55. I mean, so these guys, I mean, when it's strike, we got guys that aren't Babe Ruth that are taking this home run swing on strike three with guys on second and third base, and I just shudder when I see that, Kevin. I mean, I can't even.
You know. Yeah, I agree. And I look at Anthony Rizzo and say that's the approach
right.
that you want. You know, he may still strike out, but, you know, and I'm sure if we go look at his strikeout numbers, it's far from trivial, but he chokes up a couple extra inches on the bat, tries to put it in play, and you know what? He still has enough power to hit some home runs with two strikes. And it's just hard for me to sit there and watch other guys who are on that team, see him hit every day, see how productive he is, and don't at least emulate it a little bit.
And obviously, you can't tell these guys anything, even at age 22. I mean, they're all. I mean, I remember the pitching coach when what's his name was there? Who's the guy that played on the 84 team? Sarge. You know, when Sarge goes, you don't. The guys come to you. You don't go to them in this day and age. You don't go to some guy making this kind of money and say, by the way, your swing's all bleeped up. You know, they have to come to you. If they don't come to you, you don't have any power.
Yeah, although I will say. That the Cubs are kind of proactive with it.
It comes
out
yeah.
every once in a while when Madden's talking, and you do get the idea that they are working with these guys. He doesn't make a big deal about it. He doesn't make it a topic.
Yeah.
But it'll come out when talking about something else. And, you know, so I know they've worked with Javier Baez to use the whole field.
I don't, yeah.
And I know they're working with him on trying not to swing it as much crap, and he's been walking more.
Yeah, he's been doing. He's been improving every year.
As part of it, but
you never see a guy sit down.
He gets away from it, you know, because people are essentially who they've always been, and they slip out of that. And so when you
Kevin, hold that thought, buddy.
As an example,
SP futures are unchanged. Dow futures down 18. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters. the daily news, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tamari, Mr. Kevin O'Neill. She's Jay-Z on the board. S&P futures down 150. Dow futures down 16. NASDAQ's only up 2 now. Kevin, you were talking about baseball, and we were talking about how the lineups have changed and the people. I mean, I don't know if that's going to change all that much, because you definitely want the, I mean, nobody wants to tell his agent that he hit two ground balls at second base, was 0 for 2, and but he moved guys from second to third. And you don't see anybody embarrass these guys. I mean, in the sense that you don't see an Ian Happ or somebody take that prodigious swing and see somebody else walk out to center field the next inning. I mean, everything is, you know, very politically correct on all these teams, which is fine because you got to live together for 162 games. You can't be, you know, trashing people, but sometimes I know
that there have been guys on the Cubs who have been sat down, good players. Even Baez earlier in the season, as good as he has been, got banished for a couple of games in a row to say, you know, you got to start doing this our way,
yep,
or you can't play. You know, you're balancing. You know,
yep,
it's a tough job, as it is really for any manager in any business. It's difficult to keep your team focused on the right things. Am I willing to sacrifice some short-term performance for long-term gain, or am I going to be on the hot seat if today doesn't go very well? And I think that's always the challenge in there, is you want to bring out the talent and guys, you want to nurture them a little bit, as, you know, nurture their ability a little bit, but at the same time, you just don't want to reward, bad behavior, whatever, however you want to define
it. I have to believe that, Kevin, when you do your management classes, and for those who don't know, Kevin does classes on management, and he's a, you're not a dean, you're a manager. What are you, the head of the department?
I'm a department chair.
Ah, okay. So,
I'm not grand, high exalted mystic ruler, I am just mystic ruler.
Ah, okay, well, but I'm gonna say that, actually, one of the hardest things to do, I mean, in softball, when I manage a team, I mean, there are people that actually care about their stats, but everybody wants to play well individually. That's nice, so you can help the team. But by and large, nobody's getting paid, so it's pretty much easier. How's that for bad grammar? To install somewhat of a team concept, because you're there because you like the people you're playing with. But in baseball, or even in football, baseball more so, it's the oddest combination of a team and individual sport, that really of any sport there is, I think. I mean, football, I think, is way more of a team sport because, I mean, if you hit your block and the guy next to you doesn't, a quarterback gets killed anyway. I mean, it's almost doesn't matter. But baseball, and unless you're one of the, how many teams do we have playing for the postseason out of 30? We've got what, probably 8 or 10 that really are going to the park today with something other than your own stats you're worried about. I mean, if you're in Kansas City, would you rather win and go 0 for 4 or lose and go 3 for 4? And I think the answer is obvious, right? I mean, it would be to me. I mean, and even I'm pretty much of a team guy. So it's an odd sort of thing that matter of fact, Al Kaline, he was a big star for Detroit before your time, Jay-Z. And it, I was remembering, it was either he was interviewed or I read his memoirs or something. He was talking about 1 year, they had a meeting in spring training and said, you know, we've got a good enough team to go all the way. What do you say for 1 year we actually play like a ball club and play to win? And he said they won the World Series, and the next year it all disbanded. Everybody was back to their own stats. And I think there's it is a very difficult game. I mean, because the management is going to be the one that says, hey, Kevin, you only hit 260. You say, and then I'm going to be your agent and go, yeah, but Kevin gave himself up 15 times, and if he'd have not given himself up, he'd have got five more hits, and that would have been 275. And then all of a sudden, we don't care. It's 260 is the number. You know, they're the same people that are going to bash you, or the same people that want you to play the team game. And actually, you can harm yourself by playing the team game in baseball, which is...
You can harm your earning ability.
Yeah.
I would be really interested to hear somebody ask Theo Epstein that question, because he is a guy who is very, very focused on the numbers, the advanced stats, and the things that help you win ball games that are over and above a batting average or the number of home runs, and certainly over and above the one loss record of a pitcher, which we could probably veer into Jacob deGrom discussion on that. And let me come back to that before we get off for the hour. I do want to mention it. Does he, as a guy who is so focused on those things, is he a guy who rewards those things come contract time? He hasn't had a lot of opportunity to do it with the Cubs.
Right.
I don't know what he did with the Red Sox because I wasn't paying close enough attention.
And he also got out of there you had to pay Big Poppy. You had to pay the stars. You always have to pay the stars. It's the middle guys in the middle. The guy in the middle you're talking about. I mean, I think they.
Yeah, but do you choose to pay the guys who do the right things? So, for example, he did bring Dexter Fowler back for a year because. Fowler was one of those guys who saw a lot of pitches, who got on base even when his batting average wasn't that high. And so, he did bring him back for a year, but then he let him go because he couldn't sign him for 5 years for the kind of money at his age. I mean, that was a ridiculous move by the Cardinals, and he couldn't match it. And I get that. But I wonder how much that plays into their thinking when they talk about re-signing certain players.
I'm going to say
re-signing others.
Well, I can't believe I'm giving kudos to the Cubs. I'm going to say it's pretty high, Kevin, because the care and feeding of Ben Zobrist, who's that kind of player. I mean, he clearly gets his time, gets in there, even if he's been hurt. Last year he had a horrible year, and some people had given up on him, and they didn't. I mean, I think the guy
they paid him good money to sign with them.
Yeah. So I mean, I think
maybe they're on that, and maybe a little ahead of the curve with.
Yeah,
that.
I think they might be actually.
Quickly on DeGrom, because I know we got to go in a minute. Jacob DeGrom did not win again last night. I think he might have even taken the loss. He is 8-9 with the Mets. He, on the other hand, his earned run average is where is that? Is 1.71. His walks and hits per inning pitched is .954, less than one per inning, which is outstanding.
Yep.
He is so good. His wins above replacement. Where is his wins above replacement number? Is 8.3. So statistically speaking, he should be good for 8 wins plus for his team. And yet, the Mets just can't win when he pitches. They can't win when anybody else pitches either.
But every team.
Jeff Passan from Yahoo Sports, was starting a campaign for him to get the Cy Young Award with the slogan, "The poor bastard deserves to win something."
Yeah, well, I think you can go back in history, Kevin, and there's somebody like that. Chris Sale had a year like that for the White Sox.
I mean,
there's always somebody on everybody's staff.
Felix Hernandez had one for the Mariners and won the Cy Young Award.
Yeah, I mean you can certainly do that. I mean, I go back to the Armont Greenwood doubleheader days when if you're pitching and you're playing on a field where the wind's blowing in, you win 4-2, and then you turn around and the wind's blowing out and you win 14-10. You're supposed to beat the other guy, right? I mean,
obviously, that was almost a determining factor when we played. You remember the Palmer Club?
Yeah, yeah, oh God.
Yeah, but the biggest determining factor for those guys was whether we got them at noon or whether we got them at 2 o'clock, because if we got them at noon, they were still hungover and we beat them. And
yep.
If we got them at 2 o'clock, they had sweated it out a little bit, and those guys could beat the ball.
How well do you know your Hurricanes? We got like 30 seconds. What's the strongest hurricane ever in terms of barometric pressure? And there's a list here.
Give it to me, because there's no way I'd know.
Hurricane Wilma, Hurricane Gilbert, Labor Day of 1935, Rita. These things are 26, but one of them here, Hurricane Allen, the only hurricane that had sustained winds of over 190 miles an hour. It hit the Yucatan Peninsula. 190,
wow.
Kevin. What could possibly stand up to that? Even a skyscraper would have trouble against that. You'd lose every window, for sure. Maybe you just have the skin left, but the building would probably still be up. But that's 190. I'm thinking over 150. You don't have much left anywhere.
Yeah, no kidding.
I mean, we'll hope for the best for these people down there. And how much more rain do they need after last weekend with the Cubs? That whole area is sodden to start with.
Oh yeah, it was incredible.
The
Cubs got a break too. It looked like they were going to line up to get Scherzer again on the makeup day, and now they're not. So.
Well, Kevin, thank you very much.
Talk
at you
in a series is not good.
Talk at you on Friday. We'll talk about some college football. By the way, my sources tell me, and I was supposed to relay to you, that the Irish played Ball State $1.1 million for the last Saturday. You're paying more for these Division I teams now than you used to pay the Division IIs.
Yeah, they are paying them more for these bye games. So
yeah.
They paid them a lot of money to look bad.
Yep, SP Futures down 150, Dow Futures down 15. Be right back, Mr. Kyle Dunninger.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTIsecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@PTIsecurities.com. That's JOHN@PTIsecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Oshie, Jay-Z on the board. SP Futures down a buck and a half. Dow Futures down 15. NASDAQ Futures up 2. Oil up 68 cents. 69.93. Trying to make it to $70 here. 10-year yield 2.96. Trying to make it to 3 ever so slowly. Carl, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing okay, I suppose, all things considered.
All things. I love that. Now my question is, where the hell do we start? There's so much stuff to talk about, and we haven't talked in a couple of weeks. I happened to catch the deficit number today. After 11 months, we're $850 billion, 32% higher than last year with a month to go. Nobody's talking about that. I don't know what you'd say with, I don't know what President Big Bazoo, I don't know what he would talk about that. That we keep a lot of stuff we talk about and a lot of stuff we don't talk about, Carl. And Kevin and I were just kind of talking, and you have, matter of fact, Kevin has a couple of questions for me to ask you. How can you tell at the end of the year like this where, let's say, the economy's percolating along better than it has been, when it's been kind of a 8 or 9 year program, but I think there's no question in the last year things have spirited up a little bit. How can you tell if it's good enough when you pop a deficit like that at people and your money supply has grown back over 5% after being lowered down to 3-something for a while, and these guys are funding at all cylinders? How do you know at the end of the year whether you made any progress?
Well, you haven't made any progress. Look, money printing is the oldest sleight of hand trick in the government book. It's been around forever. You know, Lincoln did it during the Civil War, right?
Yep.
And the thing is that it always looks good when you're doing it until the bill comes due for it. And the only variable is how long it is before that bill comes due. Okay, so mathematically, if I run a $1 trillion deficit with a $20 trillion economy, all right, well, what is that? That's about 5%, right?
Right.
Okay, so GDP goes up by 5%. Period. Mathematically, there's no variable to this, okay? It is a mathematical certainty that if there is 5% more moneyness circulating in the system based upon the amount of goods and services that transact in the economy, and you add 5% to that, GDP goes up by 5%. Hello? So the real growth rate, no matter what anybody tries to tell you, you know, they have their PCE deflator and this nonsense that they put in their numbers. The real growth rate has to have subtracted off from it the change in the money and credit supply, and we can argue over asset, loans that are taken against assets, because you impound the asset when you do that. If I borrow money against my house, I no longer own my house, the bank does. So we can argue over whether or not that should count, but every dollar of deficit spending is against air. And so, as a result, you have to adjust that off. Nobody ever does. You will not find one talking head in the media that does. And then you have people like Trump running around. And oh, by the way, Obama did this too. You know,
sure,
we had this terrible financial crisis. We had to do this, and, you know, we had to do that. It doesn't matter which party you're in. They both do it. Look at what's going on in Chicago right now. All right. We have a pension shortfall. Here, let's borrow some more money, junk-rated bonds, in order to cover it, and everything will be fine. No, it won't. But the same thing's going on here. And what I think is interesting is that the first cracks in this are starting to show up in places that you really don't want to see them. And the employment report Friday had some frightening internals in it. When I posted my report on it, my first blush impression was that there was a data error in the tables.
Really?
That the BLS had screwed up somehow, and that, you know, sometime later on in the day, I was going to look at that same PDF file, and it wasn't going to be the same PDF file, that they'd fix it. That didn't happen. I just pulled it up before we came on the air this morning, just to look and see whether or not, did they fix it and just not say anything? The answer is no. The same numbers are there. And so I do not like what I'm seeing here. And, one month is not a trend. There can be mistakes. But God help us if we see something that looks like this next month.
What number are you talking about? Which specific?
1.465 million jobs lost by the household survey.
Yeah, I saw that. I thought there was something wrong with that, too.
It gets even worse because we had 2 million people leave the labor force last month, and that is the worst NILF ad number in the history of my data table series that goes back to 1999.
Wow. Well, you know, Carl,
I don't know if this is real or if this is a screw up, or is this the BLS correcting, all sorts of nonsense that they've been publishing for years that have just been flat out lies.
That could be, Carl. I would question that, not pushback, and some of when it seems to me, and this is the hardest part, if you are a government, if you and I were in the Council of Economic Advisors instead of Larry Kudlow, and I'm going to say maybe we should be. I won't go there. By the way, you know what's the biggest reason I think we're going to, I hope we don't, some kind of a crash economically, is because Larry Kudlow dug out his Goldilocks economy that he last used in 2007.
Yeah,
I actually heard him say it last week, and as soon as I heard that, I went, "Oh my God, please don't say that." The last time he said it, we had an economic turmoil we're barely out of. Anyway.
Well, he is one of the architects of doing the stupid things that lead to this.
Oh, yeah. Well, my question to you is, though, when you talk about putting money at a system, I'm going to say that in some of the history that I've read some individual, little papers that Milton Friedman wrote, which are also kind of interesting because he'll talk about, in India, in 1848, they actually drew money out of the money supply, but because so many new inventions that hit, and one that always pops into my mind because nobody cares about India that much, is in the U.S., when you mention Lincoln, he did. He put greenbacks into the system, right? We went off the gold standard.
Right.
This is Jay-Z, this is history. Remember this for your economic class. And then after the war, obviously Lincoln was dead, but the U.S. wanted to get back on the gold system, so they essentially drained the greenbacks out of the economy. So you had a money supply that actually was going down, and yet because of some of the inventions and stuff during the war, and the fact that people had moved around for the first time in their lives, you actually had tremendous growth in that 10-year period, even though you had the prices were going down, but the growth, the actual real growth, was going up. So you actually
that is the paradox, is that everybody says deflation is terrible. Okay, I mean this is the orthodoxy of the economic profession, is that deflation destroys both people and business, and it's a lie.
Well, if you somewhere along the line, though, Carl, and I don't know, I'm going to say out of all the people that I have on the show, you could probably put the date on this before, because I can't. Somewhere, I'm going to say during the late 80s, early 90s, maybe earlier, if you were to ask your dad, my dad, my grandfather for sure, how do you build wealth? Tom, you make $100 a week, you live on 80, and you save 20.
Right.
That would have been, but now people don't feel that way. You're never going to get ahead by your salary unless you happen to be, work for a bank, basically. I'm not saying nobody does. I mean, obviously there's people at Microsoft, there's people at these companies that are doing well and make a lot of money. But by and large, you're never going to. Do you know anybody, a regular person, that can save 20% of their paycheck now? I don't, unless they're single or whatever. There's no way. I mean, but I'm saying.
But understand, that's an intentional. That sure. is not a side effect.
No,
that's an intentional policy of our government.
But what
and
I'm,
the way we when right. you deficit spend, you make that impossible.
Well, but my point is that when you're talking about why these people feel that deflation is so bad, the people in charge, the Trumps, the Wilbur Rosses of the world, all their wealth is in assets. So if you right. have if you have some if for them. Deflation is a horrendous thing. I mean, because if all of a sudden Trump's buildings are worth 20% less and he owes a max mortgage on all of them, he's screwed. So in the world of now you make your money by asset appreciation, if those guys are governing, which they are, then yes, deflation is the worst thing on earth. For you and I mean, I'm not saying, I mean, but if we're working in the plant making 100 hours a week, And we're living on 80 fairly comfortably, and we're putting 20 in the bank. We don't care. I mean, we bought our house, we got our mortgage. I guess we care if we bought it for 30 grand and it's worth 29 versus 31, but it's not going to go to zero. You know, I mean, you know what I'm saying? But in those days, people never thought their house would double in 5 years, and that's where they'd make all their money, right? It's just a different world. When did all this happen? I mean, not one person.
Well, this happened. This started. All right, so the big push in this direction came from Reagan,
right?
Who argued with, you know, this was the infamous nastiness that went on with Tipper Gore, where we were going to have, and Tip O'Neill, where we were going to get tax cuts, and then in exchange for the tax cuts, we were going to balance the budget by cutting spending. All right, and that was the bargain that was struck between Reagan's White House and the Congress.
Correct.
We got the tax cuts. Spending actually increased.
Well, the next year they had a bit of a tax increase.
Well, but the point is, we never got the spending. They never did anything about the spending problem. Okay, so what we did was we went from a relatively stable deficit picture to an exploding one. And everyone says that Obama, you know, was a deficit monster and a federal debt monster. And it's true. He was. All right. He doubled the federal more than, actually, during his two terms in office. But Reagan did, too.
So did Bush.
Yeah. And you know what? This is the way, this is the Friedman orthodoxy that has taken over the, you know, the CEA, the Council of Economic Advisors, and the federal government, because it is easier to just hit the button on issuing federal debt than it is for the process of creative destruction to say those people that invent new things and do intelligent things and don't debt finance them, that finance them with the operating profits of their enterprises instead. Those are the people that win. Those are the people that benefit society. Those are the people that provide good jobs to their employees. And the people who turn around and try to play the credit card game instead, when the inevitable business cycle downturn comes, they'll go bankrupt. And that's how you stop that from happening.
Well, I don't disagree. But, I mean, we have guys that own... I mean, it's like the stock market. I was thinking about it yesterday, knowing you were coming in. I don't know if you ever heard of Professor Goodhart. But he Goodhart's rule is when an economic statistic starts to become a target, it loses its all its value as a statistic. Because then you target it. I'm thinking that even though it's been the, you know, kind of the love of my life, Carl, the stock market, I almost think is the same way now. I can't even look at it. And I mean, when I came out here to Chicago, you know, the idea was if the chairman had, you know, bad gas and headed for the can, somehow somebody'd find out about it and the stock would be down 2%. I mean, the stock market was God, because everybody in the world was trying to price stuff, and collectively everything was priced most of the time exactly where it should be. I mean, that was the mantra that I learned. And now, I'm like, I have no idea whether these things, some of these stocks, I mean, there always have been flash stocks. I mean, in the railroad times and TV times, and the first, you know, TV station was, you know, traded higher than it ever did for 10 years after it was a TV station. I mean, there's always been that. But you wonder, is the stock market, since the president has done nothing but put it on the pedestal, what are they willing to do to keep the market up? And will they be able to do it forever, or one day will it? At some point, does the Japanese market, where the central bank owns 35% of the stocks or whatever you read, I mean, is there a limit to that? Can they go to 80? I mean, or
remember that when you end up essentially becoming the market,
right?
Okay, then the market doesn't exist anymore.
Well, that's my concern. What's left for those guys to buy in Europe?
And this is the problem that you have. You know, everybody looks at Japan and says, well, you know, they got away with this deflationary trend and this money printing for, you know, 25 years, right? Did they really?
Did they really? Here's the question.
Well, no, did they really? What's the Nikkei at right now?
Well, it's lower than it was, obviously, from the 35,000 number.
It was almost 40.
Yeah.
Okay. And yet, has it ever seen that number again?
No. No.
And how long has it been?
It's got to be 30 years, 25.
Right. Yeah. So if you believe stocks for the long haul, just buy the index and sit on it, how'd that work out for you in Japan?
Well,
not so good, right? So the thing is, everyone says, oh, no, there's no limit to this. You know, the Dow's going to 70,000 or 100,000 in 5 years or whatever, because, you know, that's how exponents work, right? You know, 10% of 10% of 10%.
Yeah,
okay, I hear that. The problem is that now the Japanese central bank can't get out of what they've done because they are the market.
Well, that's right. And what percentage?
The Federal Reserve is trying to extricate itself from the balance sheet ads that they put on during the 10 years following the blow up. We'll see how that works out.
But they also have a situation where this is not a political statement. This is, I think, a fact. You have a president that if all of a sudden the market goes down and anybody hints that it's because the Federal Reserve was withdrawing money out of the system, he's going to come down on those guys. They're afraid of him to beat the band. And who knows what Powell promised him. But I mean, there's no doubt that he's got a big hammer over these guys.
You do realize that when Lehman blew up, okay, and I wrote on this on the day it happened, when Lehman blew up, Bernanke pulled $60 billion out of the system.
What do you do that for?
Good question. I wanted someone in Congress to ask him. Nobody would. I faxed all 535 members.
I don't think, I'm going to say Bernanke had no idea about any of this stuff. This is my concern with I just went over.
Well, it might have been Geithner. Here's the interesting thing. You can argue that Geithner was the one who did it because he was the one running the New York Fed at the
right,
time.
Right, he's the one who did it.
Okay.
But under whose?
But it happened. There used to be a report that was the seminal report on the money flows within the New York Fed and the Fed dealing desk. Okay, it was called the Slosh Report. It came out every morning right after they got done doing their open market operations. And at the time Lehman blew up, there were two consecutive days where they made huge drains, enormous, way out of character. And this number fluctuates all the time because of the flow of cash through the system, right? It's normal for it to bounce around a bunch. But for them, and then Bernanke had the guts to show up at the Humphrey Hawkins and say that they were adding liquidity into the system, into the maw of this, to try to stave it off. And that was a flat-out lie.
I don't, this whole Bernanke, was the other guy's name, the New York guy, Geithner. That whole group and Paulson together, they're going to be on some show today together talking.
I know.
I think that was probably the most, I can't imagine there was anybody more incompetent in those jobs. I mean, I absolutely cannot, I don't think he knew what a credit default swap was when he got in there. Those guys had no idea, even though they're the regulator, that these guys had all these off-balance sheet things. That's, you know, the interesting part, Carl, is when you talk about, there's guys that come on the show and they talk about, you know, the lower echelon people getting these mortgages and they shouldn't have got them and blah, blah, blah. I get that part, all right? And to an extent, the person who, maybe the banks, you know, we're over. They couldn't wait to do the mortgage. And okay, somebody with no income shouldn't have gotten that mortgage. I mean, I'm not going to argue that point with anybody. But that was $1. There was $34 of leverage on every single. And there's no way you and I, you maybe, because you dig in these numbers better than I do. That's why I love having you on. But there's no way on earth you and I could know that. That that there's that's the Fed's job. They're the people. When you're talking about a regulator, they're supposed to be seeing flows that you and I can't see. They're supposed to know that every swing and imbecile is borrowing money in Japan at 1% and buying mortgages that don't even exist at 6% over here to get the leverage play on 5%. You and I, maybe there's a spot, you could probably tell me there's a spot I can see that, but by and large, the rest of us can't see those numbers. It's like Enron. How did we know they had, you know, 50 corporations off the balance sheet? I mean, that's what the Securities Act was, where people are supposed to have audited financial shit. There's no way you and I could know that. And that's what the, in my mind, that's what the Fed's job is. It's not going into the bank like I did yesterday for some small firm. And I got four things about the Patriot Act and I'm signing my life away for a $100 an account. I mean, that's not their job. I mean, you and I can police that ourselves. I need to know that bank looks like they got something on their balance sheet and all of a sudden they don't. And the Fed totally blew their job. And of course the response was to make the banks even more rich than they ever could possibly be. So no matter how bad the next one was, where they don't do their job, there's still enough money left. Well, they take it out of your and my pocket to give it to them, which I think kind of sucks. But that's like more than kind of sucks. So I mean, what did those three people do that didn't? I mean, you read Geithner's book. I mean, Carl, why wasn't that you or me? Maybe it was you. I don't think so. Where he did horrible at school 1 year, so the old man got him a job as a, you know, a Supreme Court clerk, or not a Supreme clerk for this guy, or in Congress. Maybe they didn't get the kid fired up to do better next year, and then he did crummy the next year, and he got him a job with another guy in Congress. I mean, how the hell? Every time you and I screwed up, did we get some huge cush job to make to ask, so we would somehow figure out to do better? Why did that kid ever get to that job? I mean, in this
I got when I did something like that, I got fired.
Yeah, yeah. or I mean,
you know, here's the thing though that goes with this, and this is the real galling thing of hearing all these guys running around, you know, on the anniversary of Lehman's collapse, and you know, and patting themselves on the back. The Veloukis report, and I happen to know the law firm that did the forensics. Because they're out of Chicago and New York, and they're very well respected, very good people. The Veloukis report into Lehman's collapse documented that a month approximately before Lehman blew up, the New York Fed factually knew the company was bankrupt. And the reason they knew was that they had tried to do a tri-party repo deal with Citibank. And they came to them, and of course, a tripartite deal, the Fed holds the collateral, right? So they came to Citi and said, yeah, we want to do this deal. And Citi said, that's all trash. What else do you have? And Lehman's answer was, nothing.
Really?
All right. So they came to them to ask to do a utterly routine, happens every day transaction in New York. Citibank told them to stick their collateral where the sun doesn't shine because it was worthless. The New York Fed was in the middle of the transaction, and Lehman ultimately said, we don't have anything else. Now, at that point in time, which was about a month before the company went under, and all the crazy started, all right, and Paulson went crying to Congress that the entire world was going to end if they didn't get $700 billion in 24 hours, a month prior to that, the New York Fed knew that Lehman was bankrupt. Citibank knew they were bankrupt. And gee, there were a lot of puts and a lot of shares sold short in the intervening month.
Carl, the amount of insider training that goes, I actually think, well, it's gone on forever, but I actually think this administration's is about as bad as it gets. It looks like they're doing it on a daily basis. When, oh no, there's going to be a tariff. Oh no, there's not going to be a tariff. I mean, I think it's, I mean, it's almost comical. And then they have the nerve to like prosecute somebody else. You know what I mean,
yeah, they went after those two congressmen for, you know, the one guy. And by the way, you think about the insider trading thing. That sounds bad enough. I got a much more basic question. How do you have a seat on a committee and be a sitting congressman when you're on the board of a publicly traded firm?
When did all that start? Hopefully it's still my day, but I have a buddy who, you know, he Well, we went to college together. But when I was maybe 30-something, we had breakfast one day, and I said, how does it work for these guys? Because there were a couple of people in my area that I don't know if you know the history of the Illinois politics so much, Carol, but a lot of guys maybe, well, I'm going to say they would all be like 70 now. When I was in college, there was something called a constitutional convention where Illinois decided they were going to need a constitution. And somehow or another, they wrote up a plan where you couldn't be holding an office, you couldn't be anything like that to run for this convention. So all these young guys that were like 25, 30 years old, Richie Daley, Mike Madigan, all these people, that was like their first election where, you know, so they used to have their name on people's lawns and that kind of stuff. And all these young guys ran for that, and they became the next really ruling class of Illinois. And Marty Russo, right. Marty Russo was a congressman in my area like that. And so my buddy's name is Doc, not Dr. J. And he says, you know, he's way behind the other people in his law school in the sense that he's making 25 grand a year as a congressman. And at that time, he says he has to put everything he owns in a trust. He can't have another job. That's a full-time job. Not like the jobs here in Illinois where they're all part-time. You can be a lawyer and still be an alderman, right? And which is bizarre. But anyway, Illinois is the world leader in part-time big jobs with pensions and everything else, but they're all considered part-time. But he says, he goes, you can't do anything. I mean, every year, if he goes to play golf at Beverly, he's going as a guest. He can't afford to be a member. You know, that kind of thing. And now all of a sudden, all these guys, like you're saying, they're on boards, they got stock. Cheney still had his stock, he was trade. Now all of a sudden, this is morphed into, does anybody even care? Wilbur Ross, or Trump even, for God's sake. I mean, none of this stuff's in this blind trust or anything. When did all that change, or did it? I mean, people just used to do it because they thought it was right, or was there a law? I mean, now, these guys are trading all day long, I think, or staff sure is.
I mean, I don't know, and I don't know when it changed. I don't know if it changed. I just keep seeing things like this and go, what do you guys, you know, the media comes on and says, well, you know, there's insider trading charges, you know, this guy's been charged and whatever. And I'm sitting back thinking about this saying, wait a minute, what do you mean insider trading? What's this guy doing sitting on a board?
Yeah.
I mean, and oh, by the way.
Carol, hold that thought, buddy.
Hold
that thought there for everybody. S&P futures down 50 cents. Dow futures down a buck. NASDAQ up 2. Be right back, Mr. Carl Denninger.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs. Interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort. Some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456, or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar.
To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Arnold. Mr. Carl Denninger. She's Miss Jessica Zalewski and the board JZ for short. S&P futures down 50 cents. Dow futures down one. NASDAQ futures up a buck. By the way, I've warned the whole neighborhood, JZ, that you're going to be walking around with some vicious dog.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I said be careful. She's armed, so if anybody tries to mug her, she's
armed with my pepper spray?
Yeah, armed with your pepper spray and something else. The oil up 71 cents, 69.96. 10-year yield, 2.96. Around the rest of the world, we got kind of a slow morning, but slightly positive over in Europe. DAX up 25.2%, FTSE up 8.1%, CAC around up 29.5%. It's been a little bit of a mover in the CAC around over in Asia. Down, slowing down. Right? Nikkei down 60.3%, Shanghai down 8.3%, Hang Seng down 77 again, 0.3%, 26.345. Those guys are not doing so hot. Well, up 71 cents, Brent up 25, so it spreads actually come up in a little bit. Now it's $9.50. It was $10 yesterday. Gold is down $3. We just had the PPI, first drop in 1.5 years. I'm reading these headlines about wide range of businesses getting together to complain about tariffs because their prices are going up. When we come back from Traffic Weather Sports, we're going to have Carl explain to me, Lucy, how the hell we could have a drop in PPI without somebody seriously lying about it. In the meantime, Jay-Z, what do you got for Traffic Weather Sports?
All right, but just quick thought. You have to let him finish his thought before because
I was
really
that.
Interested.
I will do that, yes.
Okay, anyway, good morning, everyone. The time is now 7:36. Chicago is turning into another beautiful day with plenty of sunshine from start to finish today. Going to be warm this afternoon with mid-80s and upper 70s along the lake. Phoenix is sunny all day today with temperatures getting up to 106 by midday and back down to 90 in the evening. In baseball, the Cubs beat the Brewers 3-0, Sox lost to the Royals 3-6, and the Diamondbacks beat the Rockies 6-3. In traffic, the Kennedy Express lanes going west between Montrose and the Edens are still closed. Nothing else to report. Back to you.
So, Carl, finish your thought and explain to me how to... I thought for sure this week we were going to get like a one-point number in this PPI or CPI. And anyway, finish your thought before the break, though, because that was a good one.
Okay. So how come Ryan hasn't been indicted? How come the rest of the leadership? How come Meadows hasn't been indicted? Tell me why all of these people in Congress who let this clown sit on the board of directors of a corporation while he has a committee assignment and while he's a sitting congressman, which, by the way, they knew about because he had to disclose it. Tell me why those people are not held equally accountable.
I asked you a very tough question earlier in the show regarding when did people's income go from how much you made versus how much you spent to asset appreciation. I'm going to ask you, when did, as you recall, Jay-Z does not, there was no Jay-Z back in those days when, was it Sam Ervin that did the things for Watergate? Did he do the hearings?
Maybe.
The big guy looked like Wilford Brimley, big heavyset guy, where the famous line was, I don't know if it was legal, but I know it wasn't right. Where you said to like Howard Dean or one of those idiots, I don't get how. I mean, you see, this guy's on a board, but I know the women of the world are going to be all at me for this, but how is that any different than Wendy Graham being on the Enron board and having her husband run through a bill saying that they weren't covered by the regulatory group when these energy swaps from state to state that weren't done on an exchange? And all of a sudden, that place goes under, and she goes back to what? They didn't even send her to the nunnery for a bout with the paddle, let alone jail. What about Alina Cho? She's on the board of Wells Fargo, and look what that place is doing, and she just resigns, and now she's what, the transportation secretary? I mean, these people, there is no shame, Carl. There's none whatsoever. I mean, in Illinois, Big Jim Thompson was the compliance. What's the guy on the board that's in charge of what's the fancy name for it? Making people behave. You're the head compliance or there's always a committee of the most high end board guys that kind of watch out to make sure you're the
CEO. You're talking about the ethics committee or audit committee?
It's not an audit committee. It's like the ethics. It's the one that, you know, make sure that the chairman isn't running around with little boys, that kind of thing. And he was the chairman of that committee. And what did that guy Hollins, the guy who went to jail for had the huge party? It was the one that owned the Sun Times. Tell us the guy's name, Hollinger, and the guy had the huge party.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
he had the huge party somewhere with the ice sculptor and the sculptor was urinating vodka or something. remember that story? I mean, how much that thing must have cost? Well, Big Jim Thompson, he just, instead of coming out and saying, well, I'm obviously on too many boards at age 80 years old, I'm going to resign from three or four of them because clearly this one slipped by me. They don't care. They're shameless. I mean, absolutely shameless. But you think Alina Cho cares about what happens at Wells Fargo or Wendy Graham? That was the most bizarre thing on earth. She never even got a nick from that. Well, what's his name? Just got out. Remember me to think of this. Is the other guy just went to the halfway house last week? Skilling, right?
Well, yeah. Tell me how many people got screwed by Wells Fargo over the last number of years, directly and indirectly. I mean, they just keep finding new things. Forced place car insurance of people that already had car insurance, so there was no value to it for the consumer. I mean, all sorts of stuff.
She's a board member. Now she's a cabinet official. Okay, I'm not saying she did anything wrong. But I'm saying you obviously didn't do anything right either. What did you do? You sat there like a bump and voted for raises and got your fee. What else did you do? Obviously nothing. I mean,
right.
There's got to be some way you look in the mirror and go, I couldn't have been a very good board member. I mean, right? So. Those numbers, the labor numbers, why don't you go back over those again, Carl? What does that mean if it's more than a month? Is this the adjustment month? No,
that comes on in January and makes the January month numbers very, very squirrely, because the big thing that gets adjusted in January is the non-institutional population, all right, because you get the annual census update. So that 10, and that blows all the other numbers up because, of course, everything's percentages, right? So you get a real dislocation in January, and on top of that, January is a firing month because it's the end of the holiday season. So it is normal to see very large, weird stuff almost always, big drops in January and February for that reason. It's this thing called Christmas that we have every year. But to get this kind of, and oh, by the way, August is usually a negative number on the household survey. Okay, it's not unusual for it to be negative. It's usually in the 500 to 600 on the unadjusted, not seasonally adjusted number, but negative 500 to 600 is about right, because all the kids that go back to school, normally that shows up in August. You'd think it would be in September, but it's not. It shows up in the August numbers almost every year. But to get a number that's this large on the negative side of the ledger, and then to have that not in labor force number spike like that, is just frightening.
Well, Carl, correct me if I'm wrong here, but now there's the two surveys, you know more about than most, but when the economy is going well, you essentially have two kinds of people. One is somebody's got a job and gets his W-2, and there's somebody else who, let's say he may be on the sofa, he or she, and all of a sudden some guy says, hey, Carl and I are we're building four houses. Didn't you used to be a carpenter? We could use a carpenter. And all of a sudden the guy basically gets his fanny off the sofa and starts doing some work for us, and we pay him as a 1099 guy, and the government really is not going to know about him till the end of the year, okay? Unless household survey, they might call his house, but by and large, you're not going to know about him till the end of the year. So I think it's fair to say, and again, you let me know, that when the economy is going good, it's actually probably going a little better than the statistics indicate. And when it's contracting, it's probably going worse than the statistics indicate. But isn't it somebody's job somewhere in the bowels of Washington to say, I think that the businesses we're not counting are either increasing or decreasing. And that adjustment is made once a year. That's the one I'm talking about, where somebody says, we thought there were a million people who got off the sofa and were carpenters or plumbers in these houses. That number was really half a million or a million and a half, because now we've got the 1099s coming in, and we know that they, assuming that it's in pocket cash, which is harder and harder to do, I mean, that we thought it was a million and we're wrong, it's a million and a half or half a million. When does that adjustment take place? I thought it was like February or March when they get all those numbers in. I don't know, that's what I'm asking.
Well, that's when they get them in, but the actual adjustment month is normally the January figures. And so, although, again, the biggest impact is actually in the population figures. It's surprisingly small in the other areas of the data, which, I mean, you know, you'd think it would not be, right? Because just the sort of thing you're talking about. But I think part of the reason it isn't is because the household survey really does catch most of those.
Okay, it does.
That's not from tax returns or anything like that. That's there. The high frequency real time data that a lot of people like to try to read is the tax input data that comes from the Treasury, from the monthly and daily Treasury statements. And that's pretty good data too. The problem with it is it's extraordinarily noisy. And so trying to pull trends out of that is hard.
Well, I would say that in this particular area, again, when you say stuff like this, it's all local. I mean, Kevin always talks about his area doing a lot better, but I don't know if you're familiar with or you'd want to be familiar with Southwest Michigan, but that area from Chicago, Canada, to Joliet to South Bend is now becoming these huge distribution areas where there's massive truck terminals. Instead of being in the center city, they're now out there Southwest Michigan has got a lot of that going on. And Better World Books is there, where Kevin still has an affiliation with, used to work there before he got the teaching job. But those guys, I think, are doing something. So you're starting to see, you know, I can't get anybody for $10 an hour anymore. I had to pay $11, now I'm paying $12. So when you talk to Kevin, you know, he's going to say, well, a lot of these guys are making, you know, 15-20% more than they did 2 years ago, even though it's from a low number, but yet it's still percentage. And he goes, in those areas, at that level, it's very hard to find somebody, okay, that's reliable. And I know in my area, because I know a lot of people who are doing remodeling, and I do some myself, it's to find even, you know, this sounds politically incorrect, even the, you know, the Hispanic guys that like to work on weekends and are pretty good workers and so forth, try and find somebody who has a free weekend, Carl. I mean, I think a lot of this is just people have put off. They're fixing their house, they're painting their house, those kinds of things, and some landscaping. They put it off for 5 or 6 years, and maybe now they either have the money or just have to do it no matter what because the place is falling down. You're seeing some catch-up in a lot of that, because I've talked for a long time that Audrey, my significant other who comes on once in a while, that she says the amount of homes that even by retired people that used to make, you know, money in their savings account and don't anymore,
right,
is the amount of non-maintenance from even people who lived their whole life where everything was always exactly perfect. When you go in a house that's, you know, 15 years old, and all of a sudden the windows have never been painted or the roof has never been even looked at. I mean, that, you didn't used to see that, but now you do. So there's a lot of deferred stuff. So I have a real hard time figuring out whether we're actually gaining or losing. The statistics tell me one thing, and then I look at another statistic, it tells you something else. My gut feel, Carl, and I want you to critique on this, I think we're doing better. I don't think we're doing better enough for all the money we've thrown at it, to where I don't think it's sustainable, and I hope I'm wrong.
No, I think you're right, and the deferred maintenance thing is very real, and it's a huge problem because eventually, of course, it gets you. You know, I mean, you don't do the little thing, and then all of a sudden, you know, you got 15 grand worth of damage because of the roof issues. And so, you know, this is the kind of stuff that ultimately ends up biting you. And the problem is that deferment isn't so much voluntary. It's that everybody is getting squeezed so hard in certain areas, you know, specifically things like health insurance and stuff like that, that the money just simply isn't there. And at some point you run out of credit capacity, you just keep stuffing it on the credit card.
Right.
And so you'd say, well, you know, gee, I really should have had this done, but I don't do it because I don't have the cash. And then after a while it kind of falls off of your mind, right up until there's a big storm and, you know, there's a puddle of water in your living room. I just took a quick look at this PPI data, while we were on break and while we've been talking. There's some interesting stuff in here.
That's what I was hoping you'd dig out, because there's no way that whole. I thought we'd get a 1.2% in the CPI or PPI, because this tariff stuff is impacting some people dramatically. In terms of prices.
So the interesting thing about the PPI, and this is something I look at this table every month, and there's something really bizarre going on this month that I've never seen before. There is almost a zeroing from a roughly somewhere between 6 and 8% inflation rate in crude goods, okay, unprocessed. It's been going on for quite a while now, about a year. And this is an area that's been bothering me for a long time, because people say, you know, there's no inflation. Well, guess what? In the PPI, there is a lot of inflation. In fact, it's running close to double digits. It's been doing it for a while, and eventually that's going to show up in the economy. Right? It may take a while, but it's going to happen. And then the interesting thing, though, here is that the unprocessed, the crude goods price changes this month in all the categories are negative. Now, that's unusual. You see negative numbers in one area or another from time to time, and that data on a monthly basis is very noisy. But they're all negative now. So now the month over month, the 12 month change is now down to 2.9%, which is a low for the last 12.
What specific goods are you talking about? Processed goods.
Okay, on the intermediate goods side, they didn't come down at all.
All right. So you're talking about, I mean, one of my acquaintances that hangs out in the local saloon, shall we say, and he's a Board of Trade guy, and he says, how could there possibly be any inflation? Look at gold, look at silver, look at soybeans, look at corn. And if you look at that level, which is what I think you're talking about, obviously there isn't much. But up the chain, I don't even know if those things affect it anymore. Because, I mean, now all the add-ons are up the chain. They have to do with, you know, the taxes on the building, all those kinds of things. I mean, is that what you're talking about when you're talking about the unprocessed?
Well, yeah. So the intermediate goods are things that are not yet ready to be sold, but they're at some point been done, okay? And that number had better lag the change that we just saw in August a month or so from now, or there's big trouble, because what this implies is that the processors are grabbing huge margin improvements and essentially gouging people on the output side.
Well, that's...
Listen, if you can get away with that, God love you, okay? I mean, you know, God loves a profit, yeah? When you work hard and you make money, this is, you know, everybody likes that. The problem is that this points to an instability in the data that if this is a one-off, okay, fine, but one month doesn't, you know, set the flag up on me. I see the same sort of pattern 2 or 3 months in a row, and I'll start writing about it because it means something.
Why, Carl, I'll run this one by again. It's a question. Jay-Z, feel free to pile on. When you have a situation, and Eric talked about it, and certainly Lou has talked about, you know, the fascist economic system we're lurching our way into. When you have the three or four dominant companies in a lot of industries, and maybe even less than that, why, when you see those, the positioning takes place, and you don't see a whole lot of taking advantage of it. I mean, you can interview 15 people Jay-Z's age, and everyone will say, well, yeah, Amazon is just going to put everybody else out of business, and they're going to raise their prices. I mean, it's almost like people don't even realize that that's really the truth, they should all be in jail like yesterday.
Right.
You know, but I mean, people don't think that way anymore, right? I guess my question is, and I'm not blaming this on the president, or the people in office. For some reason now, I think businesses feel that the coast is clear to be, quote, businessmen or whatever it is. And people are testing their pricing power, and they're finding out they really have some. I think the Home Depot can sneak up 10, 15, 20%. Not necessarily on the 2x4s and the plasterboard, because I go there every week. They can sneak up on the nails and screws and the tile right. grout, the stuff that nobody knows. Everybody knows they got their tile for $3.99 a square foot. They don't know that the tile grout costs you twice as much as it did 5 years ago. I think we're starting to see some people, shall we say, testing their pricing power, and I think they finally got a real lot of it.
Well, yeah, and here's the other thing, though, too. You know, people ask about the whole tariff impact. Well, on the raw goods side, where you see the biggest drops right now is in foodstuffs and energy materials. Those are the two places in the PPI number where it showed up this month.
Because they obliterated the farmers. They killed the farmers.
Yeah, but here, you think about this. What happens when you cut off the hog and the corn exports to China?
Well, that's right. They went way down.
Well, the price collapses.
Yeah.
Well, it did.
Right. but doesn't mean
that... Okay. I mean, it's down 5%, 5.2%. The same thing with energy materials. They're down 7.9% on the month.
But your cornflakes are not down, is what you're saying. I mean, they're up.
That's right. Your cornflakes... But then I look over at the processed goods for intermediate demand, which is the corn once milled but not yet in a box and packaged as cornflakes, and it's down 0.8%. Boy, who ate the rest of the chain?
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I think you find that the tariff stuff, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if, you know, Home Depot, and I don't really have a problem with these guys, but that they're going to say nail prices up 25% because of steel tariffs or something. I mean, right now, they've got their excuse.
But it's total nonsense, because right. when you look at the data here, it says, no, the prices have actually collapsed.
Well, that's right. Well, that doesn't mean that people don't say nonsense.
Right. Well, no, I understand that. I'm just saying the excuse that you're hearing, you know, and oh, by the way, who's been running around all over Capitol Hill on every piece of national media and TV saying, we have these tariffs and the consumer is going to get screwed. It's a pure tax on the consumer. This data says exactly the opposite. The cost of bacon ought to be down 10%, but it isn't.
Well, to the extent, let's put it this way, if a tariff goes on something, it's a pure tax to you. There's no doubt that if we put a 20% tax on steel coming in and you go out and buy a piece of rebar, you're going to pay
right.
20% or more for it, higher. But the part that the tariffs from China coming the other way, where we totally obliterated our South Dakota soybean farmers and caused the soybeans to drop $2, that probably won't flow through to you. Because what I'm saying is we don't have hardly any perfectly competitive industries anymore. Everybody's got this. Everyone is somewhat. Look at what's happened in the prescription drug area, and just read that forward in 10 other industries in the next 15 years is what I'm seeing, and I hope I'm wrong.
That's exactly it. So basically, the thing about it is when you look at the whole tariff picture, right? Because tariffs are a bilateral thing, right? We tariff $200 billion of their stuff; they tariff $200 billion of ours. You know, yada yada, right? This should all, from a consumer perspective, okay, the price of your rebar goes up, but the price of your food goes down, right? And therefore, the net is zero. And when we look at that, that's how it should end up working out. The problem is, what this data says is that the business people in the middle are going to hit you for the increase on the stuff that comes in, and they're going to consume and keep the decrease on the stuff that goes out. So all you're going to see is the increase.
Well, you're also going to, coming out of your and my pocket, is the part that government gets.
Right.
I mean, we put a 20% tariff on Canadian lumber, which, of course, President Bazoo never mentions anybody. All he cares about is the milk tariff, who nobody gives a rat's behind about. But I've read it's $3,500 to $9,000 more per house, depending on how big the house is, because of how high lumber is because of this 20% tariff. So you and I are paying that, and guess what? The government gets the 20%.
Government gets the money, right?
Right. So I mean, how many people do you and you as you walk around town, or if you have a dog, or go for coffee, go for a beer? How many people could you give a quiz to, on what exactly a tariff is? How many people would come back to you and say, "Well, it's that simple, Carl. A tariff is a tax placed on me by my government to protect somebody in an industry here. I mean, how many people will give you that definition? I'm going to say 1 in 100.
Well, yeah, the thing is that the point of doing it is that if somebody is dumping below cost and is subsidizing it with money printing within their own country, which is the case with China, it
right.
is not with Canada, but it right. is the case with China, then if you don't do that, if you don't stop it, ultimately you end up with no industry in your nation
right.
at all.
Right, absolutely.
And so you have to stop that.
But if
you have to stop the intellectual property theft. But
I agree.
But the Canadian thing is much more complicated because there is a dumping problem with softwoods. But then you've got, you know, you got everybody latched onto this, you know, this dairy thing, which
right.
is pure protectionism on the part of the Canadian government. I mean, it's all it is.
Well, so is sugar
then,
here.
But then so is sugar here
yeah,
in the
yeah.
United States, okay? So
all right, Carl, we gotta go, buddies. I gotta have you back. It's been way too long, and we have four other subjects we didn't even get to, bud. But thank you. As usual, terrific.
Anytime.
SP Futures down a whole 50 cents. We'll be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks. Nice job, Jay-Z.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.